Speaking of food, the tea party was a great success yesterday. Few pictures to show you, just a great time with our ladies, fellowshipping, having some fun, eating some really delicious food. Yes, I did security. Yes, I partook in food. It was great. And Rusty as well was there helping me. He was my deputy security. He did nothing. He just sat there. No. So if you missed it, that's okay. We'll do it again. But God bless you guys. Well, we're continuing in our year-long theme on relationships. I hope you're not tired yet of that. But God is passionate about His relationship with you and me. He's passionate about every area of our lives. It's not just, you know, the things on Sunday, but our relationship with money, our relationship with the church and the mission and the resurrection. We're currently in the sermon series, Relationship with Hurry. As I mentioned, in 2007, kind of the digital age began, and our attention is for sale. We are not the customers anymore, we are the product. It's just an interesting way to think it through. So the question is, what is all this distraction and addiction and pace of life, what's it doing to our souls? Part one, we looked at the enemy of our soul. You see, hurry keeps us from God by stealing our attention. Hurry kills relationships. It kills joy and gratitude, and it kills appreciation and wisdom. You see, Jesus is trying to grow love and joy and peace in the soil of our hearts. But worry is trying to keep us from that love and joy and peace that we all crave. Jesus said this, "What good is it for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul?" We must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from our lives. Part two, we looked at the way of Jesus. The solution to an overbusy life or an overbusy soul is it's not more time. We're told to reach our full potential, to step out and take risks and have faith and chase our dreams and become the best version of ourselves. But what they don't tell us as people, we can't do it all. We have limitations. I know sometimes we don't want that. We don't want to hear that. We have limitations. Don't get mad because, you know, we're limited in our bodies. We're limited in our minds and our giftings and our personalities and our emotional wiring and our family of origin and our education and personalities and careers and opportunities and seasons of life and even limited with our time. But what if these limitations we all have were gifts from God to our souls? We have potential because we're made in the image of God. We have limitations because we're all made from dirt. We're limited. Jesus offers us an invitation to come to Him. All who are weary and burdened, and He will give you rest. Take His yoke upon you, and you will find rest for your soul. His yoke is easy, and His burden is light. Be with Jesus, right? Be an apprentice of Jesus. Come under His example. Listen to Him. Allow the Good Shepherd to speak into our lives. That's the goal. Yoke up with Jesus as we travel this difficult life. Become like Jesus. Jesus was absolutely present with whoever He was with. Jesus had margin in His life for God, His Father, and for loving other people. Jesus was never in a hurry. Do what Jesus would do. Another way to ask that is, what would Jesus do if He were me? Jesus spent time with His Father in deep connection and fellowship. Jesus set aside weekly rest and worship on the Sabbath. He lived free from discontentment and distractions. You see, the way of Jesus is coming under Him as an apprentice to slow down, to simplify our lives around what really matters. Well, I grew up in the 70s and 80s. And the phrase I heard growing up back then was, go outside and play. Go outside and play. In other words, I'm underfoot, right? My mom wants me out of the house. So I had to then use my imaginations. Obviously, this is summertime, but school, I went to school. But summertime, I'd use my imaginations to create fun. Or I could grab my friends in the neighborhood and get on our bikes and ride them and explore or play tag or baseball in the street. But don't tell my mom, okay? But I rode my bike without my helmet. I don't think they had helmets back then. I think the only people who had helmets were the skateboarders, but I don't even think they wore them. So, and if I was thirsty as a kid, right, I didn't run into the house and grab a glass from the faucet or even a bottle of water. They didn't have those. I drank from the hose. And sometimes you had to wait because it's hot water in that hose. You got to let it cool, and then you just gurgle it. And guess what? I survived. Sunscreen? What was that? What was sunscreen? Well, guess what? Fast forward to today, and as convenient and good and a necessary part of life as this is to me, if you're listening on the website, it's a phone, it's also become an addiction where I'm dependent on this thing way too much, more than I should be. A 30-second commercial will come on the TV, and then I'll open my phone up and scroll through Facebook or check a feed or play a solitaire game. I mean, 30-second commercial. All right. Wasting time in the bathroom. Wasting time in line at the store. Wasting time at a stoplight. Out comes my phone. You know, I can feel the stares of unbelief. I can see some of you finger wagging of shame to me. I could sense it. Where did this come from? I don't understand. This means shame on you, right? I feel it. Does anyone remember a time when there was nothing to do? There's a word for it. It's called boredom. Does anyone, if you're under 30, you don't even know what that word means. In today's digital world, if there's even a hint of boredom in our lives, right, in our day, we pull out our phones, and some have called it the digital carnivore, and we scroll through social media, we answer emails, we check the news, or the sports scores, or the weather, or the stocks, or we play Candy Crush or Angry Birds. I don't know if people still play those or not. A recent stat that says 77% of young adults answered yes when asked this question. When nothing is occupying my attention, the first thing I do is reach for my phone. Yes, 77%. And if not on our phones, we turn on the TV or the iPad or listen to a podcast or turn up the radio or put on our headphones. Because of boredom and anxiousness, right, all this hurry and distraction has done a number on our souls. It's like death by a thousand cuts. I read that it's robbing us of our inability to be present. Our ability to be present because of hurry and distraction. To be fully in the moment. Present with God, present to other people, present to all that is good and beautiful and true in our world, and even present to our own souls. John Mark Comer said it so well, the noise of the modern world makes us deaf to the voice of God, drowning out the one input we need most. The noise of the modern world makes us deaf to the voice of God, drowning out the one, really the one that we should be listening to the most, we need the most. If we can't pay attention longer than a goldfish, right, how do we pray? How do we read the Bible and listen to a sermon or study scriptures with friends or rest and worship on a Sabbath when we reach for our multiple distractions to fill the void? How can we thrive through all of the distraction and noise? And I'm declaring I'm a part of that. How do we thrive through that? How can we practice the way of Jesus? My sermon title in this relationship with hurry is The Way of Jesus, Silence and Solitude. Silence and Solitude. In Matthew chapter 3, it tells the story of Jesus being baptized by John. And this is right before Jesus began his public ministry to the world. So Matthew chapter 3, verses 16 and 17, it says this, "After Jesus was baptized, he immediately came up from the water. Suddenly the heavens were opened, and he saw the Spirit of God coming down as a dove to him. Then a voice from heaven said, 'This is my Son, whom I love, my Son in whom I am pleased.'" But then the very next line, it reads in Matthew chapter 4, verses 1 through 3, "Then the Spirit led Jesus into the desert to be tempted by the devil. Jesus did not eat anything for 40 days and 40 nights. At the end of that time, he was hungry." Duh, right? The tempter came to him. The Greek word for desert is eremos, right? Which could be translated deserted place or desolate place or solitary place or lonely place or quiet place or wilderness. Jesus spent about a month and a half in prayer and fasting, 40 days. And in this quiet place, Jesus had the capacity to take on Satan. In Mark chapter 1, we read about a day in the life of Jesus where he taught in the synagogue, and over lunch, he heals Peter's mother-in-law. Later that night, Jesus heals those from the town who were sick with diseases and drove out many demons. And you would think that Jesus would be exhausted from this day, but it says in Mark chapter 1, verses 35 through 37, "The next morning, he was up long before daybreak and went out alone into the wilderness to pray. Later, Simon," who was also Peter, and the others, they went out to find him and told him, "Everyone's asking for you." He replied, "But we must go on to the other towns as well and give my message to them too, for that is why I came." You would think that Jesus would have slept in, had brunch, right, and went to play a round of golf. But instead, he was up before sunrise and out the door alone to pray. And when they finally found him, he told them he must preach to others. The quiet place, the wilderness, or the solitary place was an ongoing part of Jesus' life where he was in touch with his Father. He was also in touch with himself. The quiet place for Jesus wasn't a one-and-done thing. In Mark chapter 6, Jesus sent out the 12 disciples. He sent them out to go preach and to teach from village to village, driving out demons and healing the sick. Then it says in Mark chapter 6, verses 30 to 32, "The apostles returned to Jesus from their ministry tour, and they told him all that they had done and taught. Then Jesus said, 'Let's go off by ourselves to a quiet place and rest a while.' He said this because there were so many people coming and going that Jesus and his apostles didn't even have time to eat. So they left by boat for a quiet place where they could be alone." Sounds like they had Jesus all alone to themselves, a retreat. But that's not what happened. Because the crowd saw them leaving, they ran around the lake to meet them. So much for the retreat alone with Jesus, right? And it says that Jesus saw this huge crowd as they got closer to the shore, and he had compassion on them. And after teaching them, Jesus fed the 5,000. It was probably more like 15,000 with the women and children. And he fed them fish and chips, is what I call it, right? But the story doesn't end there. It says in Mark chapter 6, verses 45 through 47, "Immediately Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and to go on ahead of him to Bethsaida, while he dismissed the crowd. And after leaving them, Jesus, he went up on a mountainside to pray. Later that night, the boat was in the middle of the lake, and he was alone on land. We read this, and we can be inspired to spend all night praying. Why did Jesus do that? I mean, was he just super spiritual? Was he just really in tune with the Father? I think it's because it was the only time he could find to be alone. He was busy teaching and healing and feeding the people that he sends his apprentices ahead so that he could stay up with God. In the Gospel of Luke, Jesus went to his quiet place 9 times. I'm going to mention one. It's in Luke chapter 5, verses 15 and 16. The news about Jesus spread even more. Large crowds gathered to hear him and have their diseases cured. But he would go away to places where he could be alone for prayer. Jesus often withdrew. He got away frequently. One author said that the busier and more in demand and famous that Jesus became, the more that he withdrew to his quiet place to pray. Usually for us, it's the exact opposite. When we get over busy and life is hectic and people are competing for our time, the quiet place is the first thing to go rather than our first go-to. In those seasons of busyness, right, we need more time in the quiet place, not less. Pastor Spence, I have toddlers. I have a demanding job. I'm needed. I'm super busy. And all of our excuses, mine too, they begin to pile up. But stop and think about this for a moment. Jesus needed time in the quiet place. Jesus needed time in the quiet place. And he's God. Silence and solitude. Silence and solitude. There are two dimensions of silence. There's the external and the internal. External silence is no noise. There's no music in the car or the headphones. There's no TV for background noise. There's no computer or iPhone or iPad dinging, right? Quiet is when you get up early and everyone's asleep and you're alone in your room or in a quiet place, or maybe you're out in nature and it's silent. It's But how tempting it is to have noise up or to have noise on in the background as you drive or cook or clean or work. Not wanting to be alone with our own thoughts, we intentionally drown out the internal noise. Internal noise is the mental conversations that never keeps quiet. You lay awake at night and the chatter is echoing in your thoughts, replaying conversations from the day, from last week, from last month. There's noise of worry and anxiety and troubles and grief and sorrow. There's noise of comparison and jealousy and unforgiveness or even fear. Noise that you're never enough. You're unacceptable. You're unloved. You're unworthy. Noise of discontentment. Noise of judgmentalism. Noise of some secret sin that's just harboring. Being trapped in the toxic, unhealthy patterns of your own mind. External noise is easy to turn off. You silence your phone, power off the TV, you turn off the radio. But internal noise isn't so easy to turn off. There is no off switch. Solitude, alone with God and with your own soul. Solitude is completely different than isolation. It's been said, solitude is engagement. Isolation is escape. Solitude is safety. Isolation is danger. Solitude is how you open yourself up to God. Isolation is painting a target on your back for the tempter. Solitude is when you set aside time to feed and to water and to nourish your soul, to let it grow into health, to let it grow into maturity. Isolation is what you crave when you neglect solitude. You see, solitude isn't loneliness either. Richard Foster once wrote this, "Loneliness is inner emptiness. Solitude is inner fulfillment." Loneliness is inner emptiness, but solitude is inner fulfillment. You can be alone in your isolation, but never alone in your solitude, because God's there. Without solitude, Henry Nouwen writes, it is virtually impossible to live a spiritual life. Think about that. We do not take the spiritual life seriously if we do not set aside some time to be with God and to listen to Him. What would happen to my marriage to Julie if we were never alone together to talk and to share our dreams and our frustrations and our fears, to just be together and shoulder to shoulder through life? Well, our marriage would suffer and eventually die. The same is true of your relationship with God and to your soul. What about your relationship with your kids or grandkids? In parenting literature, it reads, to a child, love is spelled what? T-I-M-E. If you want to live the way of Jesus, silence and solitude must be carved out as you spend time in His presence. I wish there was an easier way. I wish there was a shortcut. I wish that I could give you a back door in. I can't. This is the way of Jesus. In all honesty this morning, do you feel distracted? Do you feel disconnected from God? Allow me to ask you as well, what is your relationship with hurry right now? What is your relationship with hurry right now in this moment? In my relationship with hurry, there are consequences to my soul. Consequences to my soul. There are consequences if we don't practice Jesus' soul habits of silence and solitude. Now I want you to notice, I'm going to read a list here, I want you to notice the downward spiral. You begin to feel distant from God. You're living off someone else's spirituality. You feel God is a million miles away. You feel like your prayers are bouncing off the ceiling. You begin to feel distant from yourself, losing sight of your identity in Him, getting sucked into the bullying of the urgent and the unimportant. Then you feel an undercurrent of anxiety, a feeling that rarely goes away, a sense that you're always behind, you're constantly catching up. Then you get exhausted. You're lagging through the day with no energy. And then you turn to your escapes of choice. Too exhausted to pray, which is actually a life-giving thing to do, but instead we binge-watch shows and we scroll mindlessly on social media and we distract ourselves with busyness and activity and we avoid the inner voice by diving deeper into our work. Then you become easy prey for the tempter, which pushes your soul even further away from God and further away from your own soul. Then emotional unhealth begins to set in. You live your life on the surface, not from the core of who you are. You know, your temper flares from criticism or a snide comment from a coworker. You begin to bark at the kids and you get defensive and you feel angry and you feel sad. See, these are the symptoms and consequences of a life without Jesus' soul habits of silence and solitude. Friends, can I tell you this morning, God doesn't want that for you. He wants something better for you. In your relationship with hurry, just as there are consequences to neglecting your soul, guess what? There are also benefits to my soul. There's some benefits here. You find your quiet place, a room in the house before anyone's awake, or maybe it's a walk in nature alone. It's a retreat with Jesus. And in that quiet place, you take your unhurried time to decompress from all the noise that's swirling around you. And you intentionally slow down. You breathe. You're present in the moment. And then you begin to, you start to feel again. The deep, raw emotions you've suppressed from the day or the week or the situation that you're facing. Then you begin to do the hard work by facing what's in your heart. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Your worry, your lack of hope, your desire for God versus your lack of desire for God. Facing your dreams versus your realities. Facing the lies that you believe about yourself versus believing what God's truth says about you. Your motivations, your addictions, they're all exposed to a loving, tender God. You begin next to hear His voice above all the noise. You hear Him speak His love over you, reminding you of your identity in Him. You're His child. You are loved. You see, these practices of silence and solitude are just that. They're practices to work on. You're not going to get them done perfectly every time. But it's becoming aware of your own soul. When you practice silence and solitude with the Lord, the failures of past mistakes begin to lose their grip on you. The disapproval or even the approval, that weight of others begins to fade away. You begin to just be you in all of its chaos and mess. You're just a child with your Heavenly Father. And in this silence and in this solitude, your soul comes home. You come back to the place of rest. Rest for your soul. Relationship with hurry. Hurry is the enemy of our soul and our spiritual life. And we must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from our lives. The solution to an overbusy life or soul is not more time, right? How we spend our time is how we spend our lives. It's who we become or don't become. But then there's the way of Jesus, silence and solitude. You see, the noise of the modern world makes us deaf to the voice of God, drowning out the time and the quiet, you know, the one input that we need the most. Jesus needed this quiet time, and He took it. He modeled it. He practiced silence and solitude. You see, I still use my phone for things I need, but I'm praying that God helps me with these practices of silence and solitude. For me, it's in my chair, in my study, where I'm alone with God in the early morning hours by myself, to spend time reading His Word and praying and letting Him speak to my heart, find rest for my soul. And I stand here before you. I don't do it perfectly. But that's my heart. That's my goal. So it comes down to two options this morning. Option A, if we neglect these practices, we make excuses, we plunge into activity, we plunge into being overbusy, right? We'll face emotional unhealth, and we'll face spiritual obscurity. But then there's option B, that we recapture these practices of silence and solitude and experience the life of Jesus. Of course, option B is easier said than done. And many say that these practices of silence and solitude are extremely hard to do, especially for extroverts. But it's taking a little time each day to be alone in our quiet place with God, with ourselves. It's more about not doing than doing. It's about subtracting things from our lives than adding more. Taking a few moments, time alone with God in the quiet place, your Bible's open, coffee's in your hand, and you're listening to what He's saying to you. There you confess your screw-ups and we ask God for what we need, and we slow down and be alone, and we're present with God, with our soul. My encouragement today is, let's practice the way of Jesus. Maybe it's getting in your car and not listening to the talk radio or the sports radio and just silence. Jesus spent time alone in solitude and silence with his Father. If it's good for him, it's good for us. Let me remind you what he said in Matthew chapter 11. Jesus is inviting us, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your soul. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Let's pray this morning.